Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time to take a look at physical therapy issues, all those aches and pains and sprains and strains that you might be dealing with. And two guests back with us once again, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW-Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And they're back today to answer pretty much any question you have in the physical therapy area. And I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Lori, good to have you back.
Yeah, and what a beautiful day after that weekend. Wow, yeah. Is it fantastic outside right now?
It is.
Jill? Get outside and enjoy.
Hi, good to see you.
Yeah, great to have you. And, you know, you were talking with me before the show about an article on joint hypermobility syndrome.
Right, yes.
And I wanted to ask you about it.
Sure. Well, the Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy, which is one of the journals that orthopedic and sports physical therapists rely on very heavily as a source of research for us, has an amazing journal out this month talking about injuries to the adolescent or unique conditions that we see in the adolescent population. And one of the things that comes to mind is something called benign joint hypermobility syndrome. And what this is it's a systemic condition where you have excessive mobility at your joints. So some people will use the term double jointed. As physical therapists define this, there's a very specific set of criteria we look for at certain joints to make sure somebody fits the category of benign joint hypermobility syndrome. But why we care or our concern is if you don't have good stability from the static structures around your joint, your connective tissue, your ligaments, then you rely very heavily on muscles to offer stability or support for the joints. So the concern is, are these people with benign joint hypermobility syndrome actually getting more injuries? Are they getting more tendinitises, more overuse injuries because they use their muscles so much instead of having good joint stability?
And then what I see in the older patients who come in are people who are typically diagnosed with fibromyalgia, myofascial pain syndrome, sometimes chronic fatigue, because they have so much muscular pain. And no one has recognized the underlying hypermobility. And hypermobility occurs along a continuum from being really flexible to being hypermobile at a few joints, all the way along to a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a genetic connective tissue disorder. And there are six, I believe, different types of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And the people who have this more severe hypermobility to Ehlers-Danlos also tend to have gastrointestinal problems and a number of other medical conditions that go along with it. But if the underlying connective tissue disease goes undiagnosed, these people often get labeled as, you know, just chronic pain and this and that. So this underlying hypermobility can be a real issue in people across the lifespan.
With a 14-year-old daughter who does not have that particular issue, but just thinking about other kids, I know some who do and are involved in athletics. Are they more likely to wind up with problems because of their hypermobility status?
Well, that's a great question, and that was something that was tried to get answered in this journal. And first of all, what we see is there's a migration of people who are hypermobile to sports or activities that require good movement. You see it a lot in dancers, gymnasts, tumblers, cheerleaders, things like that. They have a tendency to migrate that way because they have the mobility to do that skill. One of the things that the research found is that Even though people who met the criteria for benign joint hypermobility syndrome had increased sway mobility, in other words, like when you had them balanced, they had more movement, they actually could control it better than those people who didn't have benign joint hypermobility syndrome. So there's a whole population that have this that are able to control it. And those are the people that we don't see in physical therapy. The problem comes when there's an individual who has this and doesn't have the neuromuscular control to stabilize their joints appropriately, and then they end up having numerous injuries. They are the people that come in and have maybe an Achilles tendinopathy, and maybe a year later they have a shoulder overuse syndrome. Maybe 6 months later they come in with back pain. They have multiple joint complaints, and no one's put all the pieces together.
You know, Ann in Madison has a question that relates directly to this, so let's just go there. Ann, thank you for waiting. Tell us about your question.
Hi. So I work with a woman who has Down syndrome. She's 58 years old, and she does quite well despite having an amputation below her knee and wearing a prosthetic. But she is very flexible, especially her hips, it seems. And I've read a little bit about this and in relating to people with Down syndrome, and wonder if you can tell me anything.
Well, I would say in general, if she's 58 and she has not had any problems to date, it's unlikely that she's going to have problems down the road. More likely, people will have issues when they're younger, if they're involved in vigorous activities or highly repetitive activities. I would suggest that probably as she gets older, it'll end up being somewhat of a benefit, because in terms of dressing, mobility, getting out in and out of a car, as we tend to lose mobility as we get older, she may be just fine in that category.
Right, absolutely. And sometimes it comes down to patients with Down syndrome having alterations in their tone, in their muscle tone. And if they have low tone, some muscles that don't fire as they should, that could be a factor as well. And there's not much you can do about that other than make sure that she has a good basic strengthening program for her lower extremity.
Oh, there we go. Thank you very much, Ann, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Steve in Montreal next. Hi, Steve.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
About 5 or 6 years ago, I had rotator cuff surgery, and my range of motion is fine. I hope yours is as good as mine is. But I have had an amazing amount of pain and or aching in this shoulder, and I have a shaking, like if I want to grasp something, like my coffee cup this morning when I tossed a little coffee on the table. I've actually even spilled a little beer.
That's terrible.
Worse.
Not live in Wisconsin, but it's a continuous thing, and I would sure like to put an end to it. Can you help me, Annie?
That's a great question.
So have you seen your health care provider at all?
Yes.
And what's the response there?
I'm going to see a neurologist.
Okay.
Sometime
Wonderful.
Here in the near future.
All right.
My orthopedic surgeon, I've talked with him about it, my family physician, my next door neighbor.
I agree with the call to see a neurologist. The twitching and shaking is not a typical muscular symptom. Thank you, Jill. Yeah, it's just a little word finding here. I couldn't find my coffee. The line was too long. So anyway, the twitching and the shaking are not typical symptoms of muscular problems. They are neuromuscular problems. And so you want to have the neuro people take a look at that. There are any number of possibilities. It could be coming from your neck. It could be coming from elsewhere. But certainly seeing the neurologist to get that sorted out is the next step. And I would do that sooner rather than later if you are really frustrated with this problem.
Absolutely. I'm highly frustrated, and I'm trying.
All right. Good. Thank you.
Yeah, let us know how you turn out, Steve.
Yeah, let us know, Steve. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Hugh and Muscadet up next with a question. Let's go there. Hi, Hugh.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I had a total knee replacement on the 3rd of July, and everything seems to be coming along quite well, according to the doctors and the physical therapist. However, I still have quite a lot of pain behind my knee and in my hamstring. And I mean, I keep trying to stretch that hamstring out and stretch it and stretch it, but it doesn't seem to help. Yeah.
What happens when you try to stretch it? Does it feel better or does it feel worse?
When I'm done stretching it, it feels better. But I mean, it's like, I don't know how far the hamstring goes, but it goes, I can feel it stretching clear up to the top of my buttocks.
Yeah, okay. That could very well be hamstring, or it could be a little impaired mobility in your sciatic nerve. Let me ask you something. Were you able to fully straighten your knee before you had your total knee replacement?
As I remember, yes.
Okay, all right.
And how much range do you have now?
Well, it kicked me out of therapy at like 125.
Oh, okay, and your knee goes fully straight?
Yes.
Okay, so the problem with the hamstring is that it's pain behind your knee and pain in the back of your thigh?
Correct.
Constant or only in certain positions or with certain activities?
The biggest problem I have is after I've been sedentary for a while, or if I've been in bed for a while where I haven't been moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems to really get tight.
Okay.
And that's where it's painful.
Okay. Have you tried stretching your back at all?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it could be some stiffness yet from your knee, but, you know, when it's in your hamstring and all the way up to your buttock, you could also be, could be coming from your hip or your low back. So I would sort of shift my focus up a little bit towards stretching in your buttocks, stretching out, the back of your hip, your buttocks, and your low back, and see if that gets you anywhere, because this could be coming from elsewhere besides your knee. If you had, you just had the one knee replacement, any other joint replacements?
No, that's the only one.
And that's 2.5 months ago.
Yeah,
right. And may I ask your age?
72.
Okay. All right.
I'm a very young 72.
You sound like a very young 72.
Exactly. I would have guessed earlier. Yeah. Now, if you stretch, how does your flexibility in that hamstring compare to the flexibility in your other hamstring? So is it are they the same length, or is this one significantly tighter? Can you tell a difference, Hugh?
I can tell a difference, but they're actually pretty close to being the same.
Okay. Well, there you have it.
So then maybe don't get too aggressive with it. I wonder if he's just getting too aggressive and kind of constantly irritating.
Could be annoying.
Going up to the back is a good idea.
Yeah. So let's stretch a little farther up, stretching your hip and low back. Particularly if you had a knee replacement, despite your good motion there, you want to make sure that your hip and low back stay flexible.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Hugh. Appreciate it. Oh, lots of callers online. Let's go to Gary in Waukesha next. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
So I'm having some heel pain in my left heel. It came after doing a yoga practice, and I noticed that there are times where I'm not really doing anything other than sort of standing on it but stretching other body parts, and it seems to, I don't know if it's like a fascia injury maybe, and if there's something I should do to take care of it.
So what were you doing in the yoga class when you injured it the first time? And do you remember a specific incident?
Yes. It was sort of a runner's lunge where the foot is extended. It was the rear foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up on my toes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like sort of stretched out.
Yeah.
Yep.
And is your pain on the bottom of your foot?
Nope. Just the heel.
Just the heel.
And whereabouts on the heel? Is it like directly underneath your heel? Is it more towards your arch?
Pretty much the entire underside of the heel.
Okay.
Do you have pain in the morning?
No.
You don't have pain before you get out of bed? The first few steps in the morning are not yucky?
Nope.
Okay.
So not
that's helpful.
Not plantar fasciitis.
So, for example, I did a forward fold, and it's interesting because I can feel it sometimes when I'm stretching other body parts.
Okay.
I realize that may put some pressure on the heel, though.
It could put some pressure on the heel. Well, there's a couple things. You have a fat pad underneath your heel, so it could be a fat pad problem where when you're standing on it, that you're causing pressure on it. There's also a little nerve that goes in there. So when you put pressure on that, that can cause pain too.
Nerve.
The medial plantar nerve, she says. One underneath that. Thank you.
Smiling.
She's smiling like a Cheshire cat.
You haven't had coffee. I'm just trying to help you out.
Okay. All right. Well, then you fix this heel problem.
Well, I think it's worth seeing a physical therapist for. You definitely sound, you're active. You're doing yoga, things like that. We want to keep you active. And, you know, this does not fit the classic picture of plantar fasciitis. Because plantar fasciitis, even if you just have pain at your heel, you would have pain in the morning, upon arising, things like that. So you don't fit that classic plantar fascia category. So it would definitely be worth seeing a physical therapist, having them take a look at it, see what it is, and then have them give you the appropriate stretches and strengthening and maybe some activity modification so you don't keep kind of irritating this.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be plantar nerve.
Mm-hmm. Could be a bursa, too. There's a bunch of little bursa underneath there, too.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff going on in your foot, surprisingly.
I don't know if this matters, but the same foot also has a plantar fibroma.
Oh.
I don't know if that would matter.
Potentially.
It could. It could be, it could have put some strain on that or
strain in
the adipose tissue.
It's a little like a fibrous tumor in the connective tissue.
Okay.
So it can cause some tightness in the connective tissue and impair the mobility of the connective tissue.
Right, right. So if he really torqued on that when that runner stretched.
Correct.
He could just have an inflammation in the bottom of his foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he needs to see.
Yeah, I think it'd definitely be worth it. We need to keep Gary as active as possible.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for calling, Gary. Appreciate your call. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, Lori Tine-Brody, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Brianne Chesso, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues with Lori Tine-Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Great to have them along. Thanks for listening. Julian Appleton has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Julie. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have scoliosis, which I've had all my life, the S-curve, and surgery was not you know, something that I should have done. So I'm very active, and I've noticed that I'm 60. I do a lot of walking. I can walk on a beach for 6-7 miles. But when I go to walk on the pavement, I find that my lower back really bothers me. And I find myself now also developing a poorer posture where I'm leaning over more. I'm wondering if physical therapy would help me with my gait and that walking, if they can maybe recommend different shoes or just exercises that I could do to help that.
Oh, my, yes.
Absolutely.
All of those things. I mean, that's what we specialize in. The interesting thing, well, there's a couple things about the beach. And one is, I wonder if with your scoliosis, if you have a leg length difference.
Yep. So let me ask you this.
Do you have a leg length difference. I do.
Does it matter which way you walk on the beach?
Nope.
Which foot is downhill? Which foot is downhill?
No. Okay.
Okay.
But it might just be soft enough.
Yeah, it could be. So the issue with the pavement is the firmness of the pavement. So this is true for anyone with arthritis, that those hard surfaces, every time you step down on it, it reverberates back up really with your entire body weight. If you're walking 0.75 times your body weight, if you're running 2 to 3 times your body weight. Whereas if you have a soft giving surface, it absorbs some of that shock that you're hitting the ground with. And so it's much easier on your joints. That's why walking on a trail is better than walking on asphalt. There were studies they did with sheep.
Right.
They had sheep walk on a trail versus pavement, and they looked at their joints, and those that walked on the trail had much better looking joints in general. So yes, they can help you with that. They can give you strengthening exercises. They can give you things to try to stabilize and correct your curve. There's a technique called the Schroth method that's used and is very successful for people with scoliosis. But we see people down the road who have the kinds of things you're talking about when you walk on pavement, just the low back pain that progressively worsens and worsens. And it's best to see somebody now and get a preventative program that gets retuned every so often.
I would think that footwear would have...
It does, absolutely. So making sure you have really good supportive shoes that have good arch support to help absorb some of that shock when you're on pavement that your body does not absorb is really essential. So I tell people that, you know, really it doesn't have to be an extraordinarily expensive pair of shoes, but you should really respect your shoes and make sure that when they start wearing out, you get a new pair, things like that.
Okay.
So I would definitely say a couple visits to a physical therapist. There are some great physical therapy clinics in the Appleton area to get you on a program that you can do independently would be fabulous. And they can make footwear recommendation and all sorts of things, particularly related to the unique needs that you have with your scoliotic curve.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh,
go ahead.
I wanted to make one more statement about that. We just got so caught up in the great stuff, is that we see people with hypermobility who come in with scoliosis. So they're diagnosed with scoliosis, but they miss the underlying hypermobility. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that we need to be sure to look for and screen for, that those two can sometimes run hand in hand.
Oh, that's good to know.
I just wanted to connect that to our little show here.
Okay.
Mary in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I am a 63-year-old with a known history of osteoporosis for about 8 years or so, a strong family history of it. And about 6 or 7 years ago, I stubbed my toe on a speed bump on a driveway. Mm. And it hurt a lot, but I was on my way to a meeting and I couldn't.
Of course.
Yeah. I couldn't break that. So I went home and iced it and elevated it and then just hobbled around and gradually it went away. The pain went away. So I had an x-ray of my ankle a few years after that and they said, oh, your ankle looks fine, but that old fracture in your foot really did not heal well at all.
And which toe is it?
In fact, you have the great toe and the first metatarsal was where the break was.
At the head
of the first metatarsal.
Yikes.
So they said the joint space is... I'm paraphrasing, lost or gone or something.
Mm-hmm. Diminished.
So, So I've been continuing to be as active as I normally am, which includes, you know, like hiking up the bluffs at Devil's Lake and walking the dog a lot and walking a lot in town. And I'd really like to do some long distance hiking trips. So I'm curious about what you think I should do. It's begun to bother me a little bit in the last year or two, mostly when I do strong women weightlifting for the osteoporosis, and when we do flexion, like up on our toes, sometimes I don't know what kind of footwear to wear. I don't know if I should really work to keep the flexion mobility in that part of my foot, or if I should rest it for a while.
Those are great questions. Well, first of all, let me just talk about how important this great toe and that MTP joint that you were talking about is for gait, because every time you push off, you need about 50 to 70 degrees of extension. You're calling it flexion, but you need your toes to be able to come up. And then if you have compromised that joint space with this old fracture, that's where the problem is. So I understand that going up in your toes is difficult. There are shoes, like Lori's looking at me, like I'm thinking a rocker bottom sole.
A rocker bottom sole.
That's what you're thinking too.
Yep, a rocker bottom sole. And then for hiking, you may want a really firm sole that doesn't allow you to bend much at that first joint. In terms of keeping it flexible versus resting it, you're so right. This is like a bell-shaped curve where there's just the right amount of stress on that joint, and then there's too little, and then there's too much. Complete rest is too little. Going up on your toes repeatedly is too much. You have to find the sweet spot. And that may vary from one day to the next, depending upon what shoes you're wearing and what your activity level is. But if you saw a physical therapist, they could teach you how to self-mobilize that joint. So a little bit of what we call distraction and a little bit of mobilization of that joint is good for maintaining the flexibility in your joint capsule and relieving some of the compression on that joint. So just learning how to do that yourself, I think would be a useful activity for you to help maintain the health of that joint.
Right. And they could also make footwear recommendations, such as a rocker bottom shoe. And then the other thing you have to think about is the position of your heel, because it affects that entire first ray. And you have something called a windlass mechanism, which your therapist would know about. And you need to kind of, because of your lack of extension at your great toe, you kind of need to optimally position your whole metatarsal and everything in that first ray.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that brings up a really important message for our listeners about shoes, which is the counter, the heel counter on the back of your shoe is really important for controlling your heel position, as Jill just said. And as goes your heel, so goes the rest of your foot. So if you're taking your shoes on and off, or if your children, as in my household, are taking their shoes on and off without untying them and breaking or walking with the backs of their shoes.
Yeah, I did it's, that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, stop.
Don't do that.
Yeah. That's not good because you lose the supportive mechanism of the design of the shoe.
Right. It comes from your heel. The stability in your foot comes from where your heel is, the control of your heel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
And one more question. Any long-term prognosis information you might have from...
Oh, that's a tough question without looking at kind of where you are from a mobility perspective. But I think if you do all the things that we had suggested, you will kind of slow down or negate the kind of process of becoming stiffer. We'd like to keep you with what mobility you have, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard to know how it's going to progress over time. There's approximately 65% of arthritis is related to genetics. So there's a large unknown factor there.
Right.
Good luck. And thank you so much for calling. By the way, we talk about seeing a physical therapist. In terms of insurance, maybe just mention... Jill, do you want to do that?
Sure. Well, by law in the state of Wisconsin, you can see a physical therapist without a referral from a physician. So you can call up your physical therapist and make an appointment and see a PT without having a referral in hand from your physician. However, depending on what insurance you have, they may require a physician referral for reimbursement purposes. So many times when you call a physical therapy clinic, the individual answering the phone usually is very knowledgeable about what insurances require a referral, what insurances don't, to know if your insurance company will reimburse for you.
Okay.
I think Blue Cross Blue Shield doesn't require it. Medicare does. So it's kind of all over the board.
Okay. That was worth talking about. Thank
Absolutely.
You. Yeah. Thanks again, Mary. Appreciate the call. Aaron in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. Just back history before I say, I did injure or break my just below my knee in the tibia rather severely about 20 years ago. Not a metal and screws in it. But what's happened in just the past 5 weeks is I'm suddenly feel like I'm falling over. My leg kind of Not pins and needles or anything like that. It just suddenly I don't have control over it.
So a loss of stability. You're breaking up pretty bad, yeah. Aaron. But
do you have bowel and bladder control?
Actually, that got worse suddenly too.
Okay.
Yeah, that you need to see your doctor really
today.
Immediately today.
I would call
today.
Them today.
Yeah. Symptoms like that are symptoms. If a patient walked into our clinic with those symptoms, we'd send them to the emergency room.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're just concerned about some central type of pathology up higher in your low back.
Yep, in your low back and your
and
spine
so
somewhere.
I don't necessarily think it's related to your tibial fracture at all, but you need to call your physician and let them know these symptoms immediately.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I did see a orthopedic knee doctor. He referred me to an orthopedic back doctor. None of them feel like they don't think that there's, they don't see anything real obvious. I am going to go in for an MRI. But the whole thing, he didn't seem to think he could do anything for me. If I wasn't having pain, what would he do? He said, even if I had a pinched nerve. But I'm really...
This is not right. When you're getting progressive...
Neurologic
weakness, and you're getting progressive bowel and bladder dysfunction, those are, in our world, those are red flags. So I don't know what your condition was when you saw the orthopedic surgeon, if it's worsened since then, or if they have complete information, but from what I hear today, this is something that needs to be seen sooner.
Right. I would call my physician and shake some trees and let him know this is getting worse. This is what's going on. And get it taken care of.
Yeah. In painstaking detail.
Right.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Louis in Wausau, we move to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. I have arthritis in both knuckles, forefinger knuckles, which is bothersome, and a shoulder problem. And I have had great success with injection in a knee of the visco supplement.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what can be done about the knuckles, and is there any possibility that the visco supplement will be approved for other joints? I understand now it's just knees.
Yeah, that's a great question. So it sounds to me like if you have some arthritis in your fingers, those are called Heberden's nodes or Bouchard's nodes, and they're very, very common little nodules that you can get in your joints. We get very arthritic in our hands as we age. Sounds like you have arthritis multiple places. So visco supplementation is not approved for anything other than the knee, to the best of my knowledge.
Right. So if you're having a lot of symptoms, they will occasionally do a cortisone injection into those joints to localize the cortisone there, the strong anti-inflammatory. They try not to do those very often. In terms of the visco supplementation, the Synvisc, et cetera, being approved, who knows what the timeline on that is. I can't give you any estimate. So,
Can I still make a comment here?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, I did have a cortisone injection. Didn't seem to do any good, but Celebrex is very effective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I try to limit that because of the effects on the digestion.
Right. Have you tried the glucosamine, chondroitin?
I am taking that routinely. I've done so for a decade or more.
Okay. All right.
I was just thinking with you having so many multiple joints, that might be a good strategy.
Right, the systemic strategy. So, then thereafter, we talk about activity modification to decrease stress on it. For your hands, we talk about ergonomic tools for household use, for gardening, et cetera, to decrease the stress on your hands, strengthening exercises to keep the muscles that support the joints strong. But those would be our strategies for such a problem.
And I think you can buy those paraffin baths at home relatively inexpensively now. That's a really nice way to get warm, moist heat for your hands and maintain or increase the mobility in your hands.
Our mother had us do dishes.
That's right. That was our warm and moist dishwasher.
Warm, moist.
But the paraffin sounds like...
It is nice.
It's great.
Yeah, I've actually, by accident, had that on my hands. And
it's lovely, isn't it?
It is
nice.
Feels really
It's really
great.
Nice, and it kind of has almost a deeper form of heat, and there's some moisture with it. So
some lanolin.
Yeah, so it works really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks, Louie. Appreciate the call. And JJ in Fond du Lac area, let's go to you. Hi, JJ.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am calling about plantar fasciitis. I'm 51, extremely active, do HIIT workouts, hike. I'm a professional drummer, like super, super active. So I maybe 4 or 5 months ago started having kind of the classic symptoms, which is sore heel when you get out of bed. And I think I was, I know I was majorly in denial about it. I was just like, that can't be what this is. You know, that's ridiculous. Like, because there wasn't a precipitating event. And so, of course, kept getting a little bit worse. A couple months ago really started. I'm like, okay, I can't ignore this. This is obviously what's going on. So I started looking up, took some ibuprofen, started to do some stretches. And then suddenly last week, it just got really bad. And, like, I had already kind of stopped working out because I was worried that I was exacerbating it. And what happened last week is I had the space and time to go, okay, I'm going to really, try and focus on this. And, like, so I did all these stretches and, was icing, doing, like, alternating icing it and doing, real consistent about the ibuprofen, did some yoga, different things like that. And then the caveat of that is I also did a couple of pretty intense workouts.
Of course you did.
But then it got really bad. And, like, basically now, like, it's always there. Like, it's always, and if I don't take ibuprofen, it just aches.
Yeah.
And, like, and so I guess my thing is, so I just got health insurance as a big plug for Obamacare. I actually live in California. I'm here visiting my mom.
Oh.
So I was able to finally got a physician, and she's going to refer me on, you know, to a podiatrist probably and physical therapy. But in lieu of that, right now I'm sort of here traveling indefinitely, and I just feel like I don't know what to do. I'm like, is it, should I stretch it? Should I not stretch it? You know, should I walk? Should I not walk? Should I sit? Should I not sit? Should I get compression, you know, socks? Should I ice it or not? I feel like no matter what I do, it's exacerbating it and irritating it.
Okay. Right. Okay.
You should get a night splint.
Yeah. That'd be the first thing I would start with.
Okay. Because that's the other thing I want to say is that I'm actually really super flexible. My calves are not tight. Like, I can stretch really far. There's no, you know, tightness up there.
Right. So it's just in one foot?
Mostly in my left foot, a little bit now starting in the right.
Okay. Do you have any idea why it started in just your left foot?
Well, and that's another part of piece of background. I was on tour about 7 years ago and was driving a 21-foot manual transmission van in the UK, shifting this clutch of this 21-foot van, trying to, like, park in these microscopic hotel parking lots in the UK where you're, like, the 50-point turn. So I suddenly started to get it. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And so my partner at the time was like, this is plantar fasciitis. Same thing. I was like, oh, no way. That's not what it could be, you know. And then it started. So anyway, so I stopped the thing that caused it, did all the
injuries,
so it went away. The long story is it went away within a week.
Okay. Oh, yeah, but that was a long time
ago.
Right,
and now you're 51.
Now you're 51, exactly. Yeah. So I'd start with the night splint. It's hard to sort out whether it was the vigorous stretching and this and that, or it was the vigorous workout that put you over the edge.
Or the barefoot yoga.
Or the barefoot yoga, yeah. So I wouldn't, if you're very flexible, when you bend your ankle and pull your toes up, do you feel a stretch in the bottom of your foot?
Yeah, for sure. And sometimes I even feel, that's why I wonder if it's almost overstretched, because sometimes I feel like a burning in my...
Right, yeah, no, okay, yeah, no burning. So when you're stretching, you should only feel a gentle stretch, and it shouldn't hurt more when you're done. So that's the standard by which you decide if you should stretch. So you stretch just a little bit, you feel a stretching sensation, you hold it for maybe 15 seconds, you do it a couple times. If it feels worse afterwards, then it's not ready to be stretched. Right. Then it's too annoyed to be stretched. I would stick with the night splint because that holds it not in a stretched position, but it keeps it from being in a shortened position at night. So I would do that at night. And during the day, I'd make sure I had on, you know, good supportive shoes with arch supports and things like that, icing and ibuprofen and so on. But it's going to take, you know, at least twice as long as you've had it for it to go away
right,
at this point.
Exactly. And I know what the HIIT classes are. I'm very familiar with those. And that's a lot of explosive motion that's going to take a while to come back to. So when you do start back with exercise, we're going to put you in a very controlled, no surprise, probably no impact environment, something like an elliptical or a bike, and work you back into your HIIT classes a little bit, because those are really tough from all the jumping and impact.
Right, right. And the more times you run through this cycle of, oh, I'm a little better. Oh, now I'm terribly worse again. Oh, now I'm a little better, so I'm going to go do stuff. Oh, now I'm worse again. Every time you run through that cycle, you create pathological changes in that fascia that make it more likely to come back and harder to get rid of every time. So you're better off doing it right the first time.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, Lori Tine-Brody, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Lori Tine-Brody and Jill Tine-Nissenbaum. Lori, a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. I'm Larry Mueller. Glad to have you listening in. Questions, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Sharon is having problems with her joints and can't keep her knees or elbows bent without significant aches. She also has to sleep with her limbs extended, and otherwise she can't sleep because of discomfort. She's not sure, you know, what might be the problem, wonders if you have any suggestions.
Well, it's hard to say without more information than that. We know in the upper extremity, if you sleep with your elbows bent, you can get something called a cubital tunnel syndrome, where you get pressure on the nerves and then your forearms and hands fall asleep. And so you have to sleep with your elbows extended. It's hard to know specifically what kind of aches it is, what kind of aches she is having, if she has symptoms during the day. I don't know if it could be related to a hypermobility syndrome or not.
That's what I was wondering, too, because it's upper extremity and lower extremity.
Yeah, it makes you think that it could be something more systemic, like a hypermobility syndrome. So, you know, if this has been going on and it's disrupting your sleep, you're not getting restorative sleep at night, you should go in and see somebody and have them examine your joints and see if there's some underlying issue that needs to be addressed.
Right.
And then at a minimum, a physical therapist could talk to you about sleeping positions and postures and different kinds of pillows and such that would support you so that you could get a decent night's sleep.
Right.
Just to go along with that, Tony on Facebook says, I was hypermobile when I was a kid. Now at 43, I have terrible arthritis in my hands, thumbs especially, that I blame partly on being double-jointed. Started at about age 35. I also blame it partly on inheriting this issue from my grandmother.
Well, that's very true. We inherit our connective tissue from our... there's a genetic component to it. And so, you know, there is a relative risk factor for, oh, my dad had a bad back, so, oh, therefore I might too. So connective tissue is definitely inherited. So she can blame her grandmother a little bit for this. Mm-hmm. That's not a problem at all. But as you can imagine, if you do have hypermobility in your joints and those joints are constantly moving excessively, you'll get wear and tear there on your articular cartilage, and you will end up with some arthritis. Interestingly, she pointed out that it was her thumb, which is one of the most common places, particularly for women, to get arthritis, because there's a very uniquely shaped joint there. And so it's very common for women to get what we call CMC, or carpometacarpal arthritis.
So people who are mechanically inclined, you can imagine if you have two moving parts and they're finely controlled by the static structures around it that cause it to roll, spin, and glide really in an optimal position. I mean, that's how your joints are designed, but it's as if the bearings are loose or something. And so things are moving around excessively in there. You're getting excessive vibration and things like that, that you're not supposed to get. And it causes wear and tear on your joints.
Let's go to Jenny in Park Falls next. Jenny, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Who am I talking to?
Well, I'm Larry, and we are talking to Lori and Jill.
Okay. What happened? I'm 85 years old, and I lived a very active life, snowshoeing, skiing, walking 5 miles a day until my husband got sick and died. He was sick for 5 years, and I did everything. I stopped walking. I couldn't do any of my exercises. It was taking care of him, and the last 9 months was total care. So it was 24 hours. I ended up with such bad knees that I went to his doctor, who gave me for 5 years Suparts. And that did give me relief. It lasts for 6 months. And then 2 years ago, I went to Minnesota to see my daughter. My husband's dead, by the way. And I stayed there for quite a while. And I went to a doctor in Minneapolis. It's not in my network, so I couldn't afford him. But I did go for the x-rays from him. And they were definitely bone on bone. I saw them. They were the best x-rays I ever saw. And he said a lot of women my age would take cortisone instead of any other kind of medication. Well, I ended up going to a doctor in St. Croix, was a physical athletic doctor, and he put me on Monovisc. He says that's a replacement for Suparts. And then he also suggested cortisone because of my age. And I wonder, because I've had a kidney removed 2 years ago, will that bother my kidney? Is it good enough? I want to live forever until I can't walk. I don't want to think about surgery because I live 20 miles away from anybody in the woods, and I want to be independent. But
so
it's very painful to walk.
Jenny, are you talking about a cortisone shot into your knee, or are you talking about, okay. So a cortisone shot is kind of a one-and-done deal. They do that to get rid of the inflammation and decrease your pain so that you can become more active. So just doing the cortisone in and of itself, if it's not matched with a strength training program, you know, it's kind of a bit of a waste of time. So you really should be in a strengthening program, and depending upon where you live and what you have access to, a pool is a great place for you to be when your knees are bone on bone.
Class, I've just joined them. But
okay.
That's what made it hurt, because I was doing everything everybody else did.
Right. So and that's a common issue with these classes. We have classes at UW as well, and some of these people have been in these classes for 15 years. And so they've sort of built up and become accustomed to it. You haven't done anything for 5 years. And so you're starting at a very different place than these people are. I would suggest seeing a physical therapist for a few visits to get started on a program that matches where you are at right now. And then you're going to have to work your way up to being more active. The cortisone shots are used for when you hit a plateau and you just can't get any farther because the knee pain is keeping you from progressing. That's when you use the cortisone to help you get to the next level of activity.
Yeah, so I would table or defer the cortisone injection until you have tried activity modification, gone to a physical therapist and have them guide you through the new classes that you're taking and some strengthening exercises at home. And only if you've exhausted that would I consider a cortisone injection. And then after the cortisone injection, you still need to continue with physical therapy to resume or modify the activities that they've given you. So I hear that you want to stay active for a long time, and I think we can do that. I think maybe we just jumped in a little too aggressively this first go around.
Right, yeah, right, exactly. Good. And again, a pool would be a great place for you to start. You can be more active without all the compressive loads on your knee joints.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Barbara in Milton, your turn, Barbara. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, good afternoon to you. I have a question. I have multiple orthopedic problems, but the one, I have three actually, the one that is the most disturbing to me and painful at the moment is I've had a bone density, I've had x-rays that say I have a mild scoliosis. Now, my back, right about where my bra goes across, I have pain there all the time. I'd say it's a 2 to 3. But I also have lung issues where I do a lot of hard coughing. And when I do that, that pain shoots right up to an 8 or 9, and it takes hours, sometimes maybe a day or so, for it to go back down from that. And I can't take a lot of drugs, like the NSAIDs and that, I can't take because of my stomach, and anything that has a slight a kinship to aspirin products, I can't take because of my lungs. It aggravates the condition I have.
Yeah.
So, Barbara, has anyone talked to you about how to splint your back while you're coughing?
No, nobody's done anything. That's why I'm calling, because I saw an orthopod in Fort, but apparently he's only doing arms and legs. He wouldn't even...
Right. Yeah. So if you've had a bone density and you've had other imaging, you know, the first thing I think of is, if you have osteoporosis, do you have a fracture in your spine from coughing, which is possible. If you've had imaging and those are negative for any fracture in there, then I would suggest seeing a physical therapist who specializes in spine, and they can teach you, first of all, how to splint yourself when you're coughing so that you don't injure your back, and then give you some other exercises for strengthening your mid-back. It could be that that place by your bra is kind of where the apex of the scoliosis is happening, so you're not quite symmetrical there, and they may be able to give you a few things to help with that local problem, as well as how to protect yourself during your coughing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the like I told the doctor, and then the pain isn't new. The pain's been there for years.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. just that of late the intensity is getting a lot worse.
Right. Yeah. And with coughing, it sounds like it's very debilitating. So learning how to splint or position yourself appropriately so when you do cough, it minimizes your back pain, I think, would be very key. So a mm-hmm. couple visits with a physical therapist, and they'd be able to help you with that.
Yeah.
And there's one other little issue with that. And that goes kind of goes back to that the lady you were talking to, and she was talking about cortisone. I have been on nonstop cortisone since March of 2001. IV cortisone, PO cortisone. Most
right.
days it's only inhaled cortisone with spurts
right.
of PO cortisone.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So again, learning how to protect your spine when coughing, because you're at risk, a higher risk for fracture if you've
right.
been on cortisone
exactly.
for that long. So
yep.
it's just something to keep in the back of your mind, and it's important that your physical therapist know that.
Right.
Good luck. I didn't know there were so many ways that you could take cortisone.
Well, asthma inhalers are, yeah. that's a cortisone right there.
Oh, it is?
It
right.
is.
Right.
So,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
And there's many long-term side effects if you think about that. My husband's been on an asthma inhaler since he was 5, and he ended up with steroid-induced cataracts at age 43 or 44 that he had to have removed.
Oh,
so
my
there's
goodness.
there's lots of negative sequelae of being on them, but that's a very common one that people don't think about.
Mm-hmm. What's the typical amount of time you should be on something like that?
Well, if you have asthma, you're on cortisone
oh,
forever.
All the time.
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
There's lots of negative sequelae with that, so most people try and use them sparingly as mm-hmm. they can, but...
Oh, boy. Well, Barbara, again, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We're visiting today with Lori Time Brody. Lori's a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW-Madison's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum and Lori Tine-Brody. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Questions for them as we talk about dealing with all kinds of physical therapy issues, you can call us at 800-642-1234, email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Let's go back to the phones and to Teresa in Waukesha. Teresa, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
I am absolutely positively so curious as to why I have a lot of cracking in my back within the last 6 to 8 months. I'm very active. I weightlift, and I alternate with the Glacial Drumlin Trail bicycle riding at 25 on the weekends and maybe 18 on the weekdays. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy doing my stretches at night to undo everything that I've done during the day. And one of my stretches to begin my little session is to bring my legs over my head and put my toes on the floor over my head. However, I'm keeping all my weight on my shoulders and not my neck.
The plow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I'll also straddle with my legs open, with my chin down to the ground, trying to stretch my inner thighs and so forth.
You have some good mobility.
You can get your chin to the ground?
Yes.
Okay. She has good mobility.
Okay.
Yeah. So and because I've been doing hatha yoga since I was a teen, and it just felt it a nice balance between activity and you know, your daily life.
Mm-hmm.
So
cracking.
6 months. Yes. So the next thing I do is bring my knees up to my chest as mm-hmm. I'm laying flat on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to the left, normally I would get crack, and then I would go to the right,
mm-hmm.
You know, bring my knees to either side of mm-hmm. the floor. And when I go to the left the last 6 to 8 months, oh, my gosh, I'm getting, like, 10 to 12 cracks. Crack,
mm-hmm.
crack, 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 crack,
mm-hmm.
crack, crack, crack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they painful?
And then when I go to the right, I'll be lucky if I get one crack.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are they painful?
No, they're not.
Okay.
But
okay.
I do have some pain in my lower left side connecting to my hip that goes down my quadricep to my knee, and a stiffness, I guess you could say, that I'm able to stretch it out, but it never goes away ever since 26 years ago when I was pregnant with my daughter.
Okay.
All right.
So, so when you lay on your back and you bring your leg straight up, can you get your leg to 90 degrees?
Oh, yeah. Easy.
And past that?
Yeah.
She can do that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She can do that. Yeah, but one leg at a time.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm doing both legs.
Yeah, I know, but can you do one leg if you bring one leg up? I'm looking at hamstring.
Yes, I can, okay, but right. I will feel tension or tenderness or a stiffness on that left side.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I wonder if you are hypermobile.
I can't imagine that she's not. If
exactly.
She's 60 years old and can still get her chin to the floor.
Yeah. 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 So, so sometimes it's sort of an oxymoron where people feel stiff when they're actually hypermobile. And
what do you mean by hypermobile?
It means your connective tissues are really, really flexible.
Okay.
Too loose, or as we said earlier in the show, some people call it double jointed.
Got it.
Yeah. And so people feel this stiffness because their muscles are fatigued from the overwork of having to do both the activity you're asking them to do, such as hiking, biking, stability mm-hmm. and yoga, and stabilizing your joints because the connective tissue is not doing the job it was supposed to be doing. So I would go in and see a physical therapist and have them do a good exam on you. And what you may need to balance out some of the flexibility work you're doing is some stabilization stuff, like a Pilates kind of a thing, but it may need to be specific because it sounds like you're a little asymmetrical in the frontal plane, side to side.
I know that when I'm hiking and wearing good hiking boots and so forth, which we alternate, once I hit an area of the trail, whether it be pavement or uneven surface, if I start to go up a hill, even a slight hill, I will start to feel, and this is well into the walk now, not in the beginning, I will feel that kink that's going down, you know, the back mm-hmm. on that hip down to that knee.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you're going uphill, she should be forward flex, though, if she's going uphill. So stenosis shouldn't rear its ugly head there. So, yeah, you should go in and see somebody and have them do a good exam. You could have a little scoliosis, mm-hmm. which is probably more likely a little frontal plane thing. And if you had something back when you were a child or when you were pregnant, if you are hypermobile, sometimes your SI joints get out of line. So it could be combined with some scoliosis that's been there, but because you're doing a good job taking care of yourself, that it hasn't really been symptomatic until now.
Right. And although you're doing some strength training, which is fabulous, we may need to get you some very specific mm-hmm. exercises that are more local to a muscle or mm-hmm. local to the joint level than big global exercises to kind of balance you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I get a little concerned that if I do a lot of bike riding and, you know, I try to offset it slightly by hiking, but that's not total difference of muscles. It's just slightly
mm-hmm.
That what I should be doing to balancing my body through all these decades of this very lovely hobby of bike riding. You know, that I've got tighter hamstrings because...
Oh, No, I wouldn't worry about
biking
that.
Biking is a great lifetime sport. Yeah, it's really wonderful for your joints and balance. And
right.
Yeah, you got that right. It gets you through a lot. And also, it's something so fantastic to even try to do even in the winter. That's how we're into it.
Right. It is wonderful.
And as active as you are, I think you should get in and have someone take a look at it before this gets to be really symptomatic for you and get you just a little bit of fine-tuning to add to your program to keep you on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, good luck. I appreciate your call. I was mm-hmm. thinking about winter biking, you know, mm-hmm. and I have a road bike, and so I need to get a mountain bike to do.
Yeah. Fat tire guy.
Those fat tires that are really, they're really popular.
There's a lot of people do that.
Oh, my goodness.
Winter biking. Yeah, I think it'd be fun.
I think it would be fun, too. Yeah, and I know there are people who are actually very excited when the lakes freeze in Madison because it shortens their commute.
Oh, right.
Because they bike across. There's people who bike across the lake. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Teresa. Appreciate it. Ann in the Madison area, it's your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about my low back pain. Last year, earlier in the year, I finally went in. It takes me a while. I'm rather stubborn. And they did x-rays, and I went to physical therapy. The x-rays showed degenerative disc disease to some extent, some arthritic changes. I had no luck with the physical therapy that I went to at that time. I did start with acupuncture, massage therapy, went back to the spine clinic, and I did have an MRI last December, and it shows a ruptured disc, L5-S1. Mm-hmm. So there's no specific, like, one injury that may have caused this, but I've been dealing with pain from this. I think that it's ruptured and it's sitting on my nerves, and it's a result of nerve pain that I've been dealing with. I have, for the last few months, been doing physical therapy through an app that the UW, I believe, is trying. So it's exercises mm-hmm. at home every day. And I'm active. I work out. And the pain is not, it's not going away. I'm wondering if you ever see a disc heal on its own. I mean, that was my intention. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to heal this.
Yeah.
My body can heal itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are people who can heal a disc, or if you have like a fragment that ends up sitting on the nerve, your body will eventually reabsorb that. But there are specific directional movements that we encourage patients to get into to kind of help heal the ligaments, et cetera, back there. And so, you know, what you probably did originally for your degenerative disc disease may not be the same thing that you need to do for what we now know is kind of a ruptured disc. So I'm not sure if somebody has you kind of biased into an extension-based program.
Right. So, yeah, I would say that it's time to go back in and be examined again, because you're not the same person you were a year ago or even for the past several months when you've been doing the app. So at the spine clinic, we see lots of people in various stages of low back pain due to disc disease or disc herniations. And the fact that you're not getting better suggests that something is being overlooked, or the program isn't fine-tuned correctly for you and your specific set of circumstances. Some people have, again, if you think of that bell-shaped curve of too little activity and too much activity and that sweet spot in the middle of the right mm-hmm. amount of activity, some people have a really big sweet spot and, you know, they can do well with an app, or you can kind of throw almost anything at them and they'll do pretty well. There are other people who have a very narrow sweet spot, and so getting the exercise treatment just right for them takes a lot of work. So my guess is you probably have a narrower sweet spot, and given whatever your other activities are during the day, it may compromise or conflict with the other things that you're doing and make it harder to get the prescription of exercise just right. So it's going to take more one-on-one work with someone.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ann. Christine and Franklin, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I've been told I have severe arthritis, and I've already had my hips replaced and just half a shoulder put in because there was no saccadic bone left to put the artificial saccade into, and too much for bone loss. But is there any way that they can reverse or restore bone loss?
So it sounds to me like you have arthritis and osteoporosis. So if your bone, if they didn't have very good bone stock, now you're talking about osteoporosis, versus osteoarthritis is that inflammation that you get at your joints.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Those are two different things. And so the arthritis is what you had probably in your hips when you had your hips replaced. That's an arthritic hip. But if they said you don't have good bone stock when you did your shoulder replacement, that sounds like osteoporosis.
Are you seeing someone for osteoporosis?
No, I'm not. I just see surgeons
Pretty much want to replace all my joints already. I've got a left knee replacement.
Right. So when you have osteoarthritis, you don't have cartilage over the ends of your bones, like that shiny, slick stuff over the end of a chicken bone. That's the articular cartilage, so that wears away. You don't have good articular cartilage. But if your doctor has said you don't have sufficient bone for your joint replacements, and how long ago did you have your hips done? Did you have good bone there?
No, I had both my hips replaced 35 days apart at Frederick.
Okay.
And it was, Dr. Nielsen was fantastic.
Okay.
But anyways,
and how long ago
was
that?
It was November 10th and December 15th, 2014.
Okay. But they didn't comment about your bone quality at that time.
He told me, because the doctor who replaced half my shoulder said that I had severe arthritis. You have the gene, even though we haven't pinpointed the gene, you have it. So I asked the other doctor who did my hips, Dr. Nielsen, do you agree? And he said, I have severe arthritis. Do you agree? And he turned around and said, you have severe arthritis. But everybody keeps telling me I have arthritis.
Okay. So if your question is, can you reverse the arthritis, the answer is no. You can't reverse the arthritis. You can minimize the symptoms of it by keeping your joints as mobile as possible, keeping the muscles around them as strong as possible. If you have a bone issue, I would probably talk to my primary care physician. If you haven't been evaluated for osteoporosis at this point in your life, you should probably have a conversation with your primary care physician at this point about that and follow whatever those recommendations are.
Do you know what kind of doctor you would see for bone loss?
An osteoporosis doctor.
Right, or a gerontologist. Somebody who kind of, gerontologists usually are the first line of defense because they work with people who are elderly, and that's usually the classic population we see with osteoporosis.
Right. And some primary care physicians feel comfortable managing it themselves as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there we go.
I know I have had a test, but that's been a number of years. And
You
might be time to revisit that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Dave in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have. I run every day, 4 to 5 miles.
Okay.
I'm 63. I've been running for 38 years now. And my just recently, last few months, my right ankle has been bothering me. And I didn't fall. I didn't hurt myself. I don't know what happened, but just all of a sudden, one day, it started bothering me. And it's kind of like a severe pain in the ankle. It wasn't swollen, it wasn't bruised. I don't know what I did. And I found even then that if I'd run for like a mile or so, it would go away. So I could keep running and there was no problem. But, and I was taking a leave, once every 12 hours.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And, because I got all my, medical information from WPR.
I thought you were going to say Dr. Google.
So actually, recently I switched to ibuprofen, and I've been taking 2 every 6 hours.
Yee.
That's a lot.
And it's like a week and a half I've been doing that. And it's not bad. I mean, I can walk, and it's like one to ten, it's like a one only, you know. But it's not going away.
It's time to see somebody. So, how was it first thing in the morning when you got out of bed?
No problem. It's not that bad.
Okay.
But once in a while, if I really twist my foot out of, you know, not the correct angle, it hurts. But
okay.
It doesn't hurt. Walking, it doesn't hurt. Again, like one or two. And again, once I start running, it goes away completely.
Right.
You know, I don't even notice it after.
So it's like a low-grade tendinopathy, it sounds like. To me, it's some sort of tendinous irritation. But the problem is, you know, you're taking a fair amount of anti-inflammatories, which is not good for you.
Yeah.
No offense, but at your age, that's a problem. And you're running a lot, and we want to keep you active. And so it'd be nice if we could keep this at bay at a one or a two without any medication. So I definitely think it's time to see a physical therapist. Why it happened on one side and not the other is hard to say. It could be perhaps the route in which you run. If you run on a canted. Road with a cant, that could be a factor. Bring your shoes in when you see the physical therapist. It might have something to do with
could
your shoe
could be a leg
wear.
Length discrepancy.
Could be a leg length, but it's for whatever reason, there was something that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And yes, it's low grade, but we don't want it to be low grade for 6 or 8 months. You want to get this under control.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to be taking that much ibuprofen.
Exactly.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Ken in Algoma, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi. A couple years ago, a doctor put me on a statin, and I started having problems with my legs aching. I walked like a half a mile, and I just don't want to go anymore. And then I got a refill, and all at once, my legs really got bad, my knees. And I stopped taking it, thinking it's from the statin, and now it's getting better. But is there something you can do to get this out of your system?
So are you off the statin now?
Right.
Okay, good.
Completely.
Well, you know, for some people, it just goes away gradually over time. We see people in PT who come in complaining of leg pain, often thigh pain, and they're on a statin. So, you know, we give them an exercise program. We try to keep them active. For many people, the pain gradually resolves over time. For some people, it just stays, and I don't know that there's any way to predict
who
will do well.
I don't either. I know my husband had this situation as well, and he went off his statins, and his pain subsided in, I don't know, 5 or 6 days. It was a really quick recovery, and I don't know if it's a brand, if it's a dosage, if it's
if it's an age, how long you've been on it.
Correct.
Yeah. But again, we see people in PT. We give them strengthening exercises for their legs. We help keep them mobile. We want to keep them walking. We want to keep them active as possible, and just kind of continue to work through it.
Right. But there isn't. It's a great question, but unfortunately, I don't think we know the answer.
I don't think anyone knows the answer.
But it's
at this
a great
point.
Question.
Yeah. I know somebody who had an increase in the dosage amount, and then had the problem.
Right.
Then got off it entirely for a week, and then started back on the lower. Hasn't had any problems.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Ken, thank you so much for calling. Just quickly in the last few seconds here, what do you think of cheater machines which hang patients upside down?
Are those
you mean like an inversion table?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we like inversion tables as long as there's no contraindication to it. So any vascular issues, any eye pressure issues, things like that, it's something you should probably discuss with your doctor to see if there's any contraindications to inversion. But again, you don't have to invert completely upside down either. Sometimes just a little bit of inversion is enough to unload your back.
Right, and make sure that you have the indications for it. You wouldn't want somebody who's hypermobile or unstable to do something like that. So you'd have to make sure that you're it's indicated for you.
Right.
All right. Well, we are out of time. You guys are going to be back November 20th.
Awesome.
Right before Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. We'll do it all over again. Lori and Jill, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. They will be back on November 20th. Tomorrow we'll talk with author Jan Caron about the latest book in her Mitford series, which is, I think, number 5 on the bestseller list. Looking forward to that. And how to improve the food your kids get in school. In the meantime, stay with us.